David St. Huggins. I must admit, I've never heard anybody with that name.
What's an unusual name? Well, he was an unusual saint. He's not a very well-known saint.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Oh, there actually is, there was a St.
Yes.
Hubbins.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, what was he the saint of?
He was the patron saint of quality footwear.
It's like a whole different world. It's amazing. Now, if someone's like a worshiper of Santa Muerte, there is it pretty open down there that they worship Santa Muerte? Or is it like that she's just part of a pantheon of different, you know, deities that get worshipped?
You know, it varies where you go. I've actually been into a Botanica, a spiritual supply store, up around East Tennessee that is totally dedicated to Santa Muerte. And in the store, there's about a 6 to 7 foot statue of Santa Muerte, very out in the open. All the business cards for the business have images of her. When you go into a particular market in Memphis, there's a large image of Santa Muerte standing by the door. And so, you know, it depends on where you're at. In many of the Latin American communities, she's just very open. They're just very much out there. But as far as having personal shrines, the majority of followers that I've met have been rather subtle about their involvement in following Santa Muerte.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about some of your other research and stuff you've done studying these magico-religious cultures, because I'm fascinated by this. Now, you say you've interviewed practitioners, observed ceremonies, and documented practices of numerous African and Latin folk healing traditions. So, like, I guess just, like, talk a little bit about your experience, like, seeing this kind of stuff, because it's so, you know, far out from my worldview and from my experience, and I'm sure of many of the listeners.
Sure. It's, you know, and where we are here in the South, it's when public safety agencies encounter, and Santa Muerte is a great example of this. As we see the migration of different cultures into the United States and personally into the southern states, you know, we're going to have this great cultural misunderstanding between communities that are here and different cultures that are coming into the area.
Yeah.
And one of the areas that we see this really heavy in is in the area of religious culture. And so we have instances where, say, a paramedic working on an ambulance goes to answer a call, and when they get to a home, they see a shrine in the house. Do they touch it? Do they call the police and say there's something illegal going on? One of the things that we try to do is to get public safety agencies familiar with normative practices of these groups. And the way we do it is by interviewing normative practitioners and by observing and documenting some of the different activities that they practice in their culture. And what we're able to do is to use this in training and to basically say, okay, look, you can either be shocked when you walk up on a scene and bumble the scene up and bumble the communication with your patient or your client up by freaking out, or you can see it in a controlled environment, and then when you walk on the scene, you'll have a grasp of what you're seeing, and you'll be able to communicate, you know, look, I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
I'm not here to get in your business as far as your spirituality. And through the years, I've had the privilege to observe and document some of the different ceremonies of the Santeria faith. You know, one of the ceremonies that I attended there, a lady from Havana was performing a divination ceremony where she asked the gods, the Orishas, were they happy with how things were in her household? And they told her that, you know, your husband needs to sacrifice a goat, that's something we're requiring. And her husband, who's Catholic and not a practitioner, was called into the room and told the request, you know, from the spirits. And so he was very uneasy. It was a very awkward moment when a wife tells the husband, you know, you're going to have to sacrifice a goat because the gods are calling for it.
Yeah.
I've had the privilege to document some ceremonies from the local neo-pagan Wiccan communities. You know, again, with not understanding cultures, we'll have instances where a police officer may come up on a scene and all he sees is people in robes and a knife and fire, and he automatically assumes, wow, there's something, you know, pretty bad going down here.
Yeah, yeah.
And it may be something totally innocuous. You know, that's one of the things we try to do is to document that and show officers what they're going to see when they come on the scene.
I saw like a special, I think it was Taboo on National Geographic, and was talking about, I don't know which country it was, but it was somewhere in Africa where like somebody was accused of being a witch and they were like banished to like a witch town. Have you heard of this whole thing?
Yeah, that's, you know, the whole, when we talk about witchcraft in an African context, and many times in a Mexican context as well, we're not talking about Wicca. We're not talking about, you know, benign metaphysical practices. We're, in that connotation, in that culture, witchcraft is seen as this harmful sorcery. And so in Africa, we have situations where families will many times have a child who's got a birth defect or have a sickness, and the child will be socially isolated from the community because that child's considered a witch. In one of the towns in Kisii, which is a town in outside of Kenya, in Kenya, one of the big problems they have is murders related to witchcraft accusations. And there have been situations where elderly people have been set on fire, where children have been hacked to death with machetes, and it's because there's this permeating superstition and belief that they have some sort of witchcraft associated with them and that they'll harm the community. There's a tremendous effort going on right now in Nigeria and areas of West Africa where before children being accused of witchcraft were put through very extreme exorcisms. And there are organizations like Stepping Stones out of Nigeria that are going in and providing ways to get these children off the streets. In the capital city of Kinshasa in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, there are hundreds of thousands of children in the streets who have been abandoned because their parents believe they're witches.
Oh, my God.
It's a Holocaust within itself. And some of the things that are going on there are just unbelievable.
It's easy as a, you know, a Westerner to sort of dismiss the magical aspects of these religious cultures. But as someone who's been down there and seen some of these ceremonies and talked to people who've, you know, who live in the lifestyle, I mean, have you heard or seen anything like, I guess you could say magical? Do you know what I mean? Like supernatural in the way, you know, as a result of some of this magico-religious cultures?
I myself personally have not seen anything that I would consider magic at work. But I can say I've interviewed enough folks and looked into their eyes when they've told you stories of things they've experienced to know there is something that is going on.
Yeah.
And to know that it is a very real worldview that many, many people hold.
Okay. Do you have any good stories like that people might have told you, like of something weird happening?
Gosh, you know, when we talk about, especially when we talk about Africa is a whole other ball field. When you step into the atmosphere of Africa, spirituality is such a important aspect of African culture that, you know, one of the first times I was in Africa, my translator said, we were walking along and there's a tree stump, and on this tree stump is this really beautiful big lizard had crawled up on the stump. And I go to take a picture of it, and my translator, who's African, grabs my arm and pulls me back, and he goes, "No," he says, "you do not want to get near that." And he says, "It's evil." And I said, "You know, that's a lizard." And he said, "No." He said, "You have to understand that is evil." And the more I spent time with some of the people of his particular people group, the more we understood the appearance of different animals are sort of omens in their particular culture. So you would be going somewhere and a particular type of bird would fly over a hut And he would immediately jump back and say, you know, that is a sign of sorcery. That is a sign of witchcraft. And so, you know, just some very, very interesting things. Out of Nairobi, there was a problem for a while with a street gang called the Mungiki. And the Mungiki are from the Kikuyu people of Kenya. And the Mungiki are trying to revive the Mau Mau traditions of Africa. And they believe in the Kikuyu, following the Kikuyu gods, and they believe that using snuff is a sacrament. And they're typically physically characterized by dreadlocks. And in Nairobi, they're very well known for beheadings with machetes. And they'll be in the marketplaces many times, and if they see a woman that they consider inappropriately dressed, they'll rip her clothes off, and in some cases have attacked her with machetes.
Oh, my God.
So it's a very different culture, and a very it's that particular group, the Kenyan government outlawed that particular group a couple of years ago, and there were sort of it was very similar to the drug war in Mexico. You had the police cracking down cartel, you know, type groups, and security threat groups, and so yeah, it's a very hostile environment at times.
Seems that way, yeah. Were you now? I just saw the picture of you. You look like a pretty big guy, but so I guess you didn't run into any sort of like trouble like that or anything, right? Well, I'm talking to you, so I guess not, right? And have you looked at the Native American cultures and you know their sort of magical religious aspects to them? Have you looked at that at all?
I have family that do have a definite traceable lineage to some of the Native American, you know, ethnic groups, and I think that is a fascinating area. One of the fascinating cases with them involving the use of Native American culture is, you know, of course, over the last couple of years, some of the groups that are trying to use hallucinogenic drugs and claim that they're affiliated with Native American traditions.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see this happen many times. Some of the groups may have some loose affiliation, but many times we're seeing groups basically prostitute the culture of Native Americans and use it to push their own things, and they may not even have Native American blood in them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, that's no surprise, I guess. Now, I see here in your bio that you were on the History Channel's UFO Hunters, which I'm wondering how that ended up happening. So what's the connection there?
Yeah, that was different. I got called by the show because they were working on some episodes involving cattle mutilations. Mm-hmm. And, of course, anytime you have the subject of cattle mutilations come up, the whole urban legends about satanic groups going out and you know, doing these mass animal sacrifices and secret animal sacrifices comes up. And there was a small town in Missouri that was experiencing cattle mutilations. And they called me and said, we want someone who has seen an animal sacrifice done in a religious context to kind of come and see what you think of this. And so I went there, and, you know, you're looking at a cow in the middle of a pasture that's had its eyes removed and its anus removed and its sexual organs removed, and all the soft parts of the animals that predators like. And I told him, I said, you know, let me just go ahead and put it on the table. There are no traditional magical religious groups that are going to sneak over to someone's house, kill an animal like that. And in that context, it's not a sacrifice. You're going over and killing someone else's animal. What kind of sacrifice is that? You're stealing a sacrifice. In fact, if you know, to me, that would offend a god.
Yeah.
Going over to someone else's property and killing an animal like that. So they're you know, and when we talk about animal sacrifice within magical religious cultures, you know, a lot of times we get this image that someone at, say, a Santeria center or ceremony, you know, just grabs an animal and kills it, or kills a dog or a cat or whatever. There are specific criteria that are passed down in these traditions. You know, you only kill certain animals, typically animals we would eat, like chicken, you know?
Yeah.
And they're killed in such a way that they're kind of put into shock as they're killed, and there's no torture there. It's just done as an offering, and there's a criteria, and there's a ritual, and they're left, they're typically cooked after they're sacrificed, and unless they were used to remove a sickness. And so, you know, when we think animal sacrifice, we get these images of, you know, savage voodoo ceremonies of people killing animals and butchering cats and things like that, when in the reality, the actual practice of animal sacrifice in these religious cultures is done in a very organized, structured manner, and it's done in a way that typically is not harmful as far as creating pain in the animals.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm going to sound like a complete rube here, or I'm going to sound like someone who's uneducated, so forgive me, but what about, it sounds like you've studied voodoo pretty extensively. What about the whole zombie thing with voodoo that's sort of like part of the, you know, the pop culture aspect of it? What do you know about that whole thing?
Well, from my limited understanding on voodoo, the aspect of the zombie, there are these concepts known as astral zombies, where people can be somewhat controlled and spirits can be controlled. You know, I think there was some validity to what anthropologist Wade Davis found that was, you know, documented in The Serpent and the Rainbow as far as his writing, maybe not the movie, but as far as the use of, you know, the pufferfish and some of the different powders that were created there to simulate death, to slow the heart rate down. But as far as there being this, you know, creation of zombies, one of our contacts who is a recognized priestess, a mambo in Haitian voodoo, you know, says, I get asked about zombies, but that's not something we do. You know, it's not something that's there. It's very much a Hollywood thing, much like voodoo dolls.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Oh, so voodoo dolls aren't really that much of a part of the whole thing either?
Not as part of traditional voodoo. You know, voodoo, whether it be West African voodoo or Haitian voodoo, you know, there are images used typically in healing rites, but the whole stick a pin in the doll, we think that a lot of that was misconstrued from some of the early Congo civilizations that used images that had nails driven into the images to incite a spirit or to trap a spirit, but not to, you know, think of your boss and stick a needle in the doll to give him a headache, you know.
Yeah. Now, one other element in the book that I completely glossed over and didn't get a chance to ask you about is this Mexican folk magic, which you really detail pretty extensively in the book, and I know you've written about it for Fate magazine. So talk a little bit about, you know, Mexican folk magic and what that's all about.
Actually, when we look at Mexican folk magic, it's less of a religion and more of a healing tradition. The practice of curandero is a healing tradition that utilizes recognizing Catholic saints, some of the folk saints, and focuses on the body being spiritually balanced. Curanderismo, the name actually comes from the Spanish word curar, to heal. And so the whole focus is that healing. That particular tradition is where we see many times the use of some of the folk saints, like, you know, Dr. Hernandez or Our Lady of Guadalupe or even Santa Muerte. And typically the healer, known as a curandero, if it's a female, it's a curandera, would utilize herbs and powders and oils and candles to bring about balance to someone spiritually. In return or in effect, that brings about balance to that particular person physically.
Okay. And it's interesting, too, when you really think about it, because it's like this stuff's pretty still obviously it's huge in Africa and stuff. You know, the magico-religious cultures, and as you say, this folk aspect of everything down in Mexico is pretty big. It's just surprising because I guess you don't really see it in the mainstream here in America too much, but I have a feeling that it probably is a part of the cultures that come to America and you know, integrate themselves into our country, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's, you know, it is, when you look for it, it is here in the United States. You know, we have Wiccan practitioners, we have Santeria practitioners, we have Voodoo practitioners, we have all sorts of different magical religious cultures throughout the United States. And, you know, some of the ethnic traditions that are specifically ethnic, say Haitian Voodoo, you do find many times sort of isolated to particular communities where maybe there is a family of Haitians that brought their religion with them when they moved to this country. But what we're seeing here, too, in 2010 is where we might used to only see particular ethnic groups practicing, say, Santeria, now in 2010, you've got upper-class Caucasians practicing some of these ethnic traditions.
Yeah.
So I think the door has opened, and these cultures are opening themselves up to different ethnic groups. And you know, again, it differs geographically. How things are practiced in the South differs a little bit than how things may be practiced, say, in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with what is the atmosphere in the community. You know, here in the South, opening a botanica and putting a statue of, you know, a African god in the front window might draw a lot of attention, but if you do it in Brooklyn, you know, it's no big deal. It's part of the landscape. It's part of the neighborhood. And so, again, I think it just depends on, I'm fascinated by how practitioners of these particular cultures, how they function, how they continually survive in environments where their particular faith is seen as taboo.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's interesting, and you got to give them credit, I guess, you know, because they still hold on to those values despite America and everything.
You know, and that theme of survival is a theme that has brought and kept religions like Voodoo and Santeria. It's through the survival of how they changed and how they coped with the cultural stresses around them that they're here today. So I think historically they're fascinating to examine how they've made it here and how they've survived.
What do you have on the agenda next? I mean, obviously this book's pretty new, so you're sort of spreading the word about that. You know, what kind of stuff are you looking at for future investigations?
Actually, we're still trying to do a lot of work in East Africa. We're focused is on putting out an educational program there in some of the communities to spread education about preventing witch hunts and witchcraft-related violence. And I know that's something that here, you know, we tend to think is just a whole nother world, but it's a reality going on in many people's lives there. And so we're continuing to do work there with providing medical care and education there in some of the communities of East Africa.
Yeah, that sounds just horrifying of a situation. I mean, how do you even... The show I saw, the lady was just like accused of witchcraft by someone who didn't like her, and then she was pretty much banished. The trial was very, you know, sort of magico-religious, to use, you know, to probably misuse the phrase, but I think you know what I mean. It was like, you know, the priest of the tribe pretty much did something in front of her hut or something, and then next thing you know, it was like, all right, she's a witch for sure.
Yeah, it's, you know, and what we're seeing is because all of that begins as a thought, and as a thought, it starts to take shape and move into action, that by providing education to combat that, then that thought can start solidifying and hopefully turn into a behavior to make an ideal safe environment. You know, there's still such a cloud of misunderstanding in areas there of Africa with even with diseases like AIDS. It's still believed in many areas that a male with AIDS if he has sex with a virgin, that it will take AIDS away from him.
Oh, God.
So you've got young girls walking around who are dying of AIDS because this false belief is still permeating different communities. And it's only by the efforts of the Red Cross and groups that are going over and providing education to kind of turn the tide on this. And that's what we hope to do with some of this education against witch hunts and some of the extreme exorcisms going on with children.
My goodness. It's unbelievable. Now, has this backlash against Santa Muerte in Mexico, I think you said it was like around 2008 that they destroyed all these temples and everything. Has it sort of like lessened since then, or is it more intense, or, you know, what's the status, I guess you could say, of Santa Muerte in Mexico?
Santa Muerte in Mexico seems to, in a lot of ways, kind of taken the back burner as the Mexican government and the United States government become more involved as far as the antagonism there that's going on with you know, the possibility of troop buildup on the border and issues relating to immigration. But I think it's still there. You know, I've got a contact in Mexico City, and she said, I know that the government put the word out that they were the ones that wanted these temples crushed. And she said, but I have it by good word of someone that's very trustworthy, in a high place, that a lot of those shrines were destroyed because they were taking congregants away from Catholic churches in those areas.
Yeah, that's
and
what
so,
I was thinking, yeah.
You know, we may see some other motivations there in that. And I think it's fascinating to see, too, this quote, magical buildup between the police and the drug cartels. I kind of compared it to we had in the Carolinas years ago, a sheriff, Ed McTeer, who realized that the majority of his jurisdiction had a population that believed in Southern folk magic and hoodoo. And so McTeer took it upon himself to learn the ways of hoodoo, and he became known as a very well-known, powerful root doctor. And this sort of cut down on some of the things that were going on as far as criminal activity associated with magical practices. And so I wonder if, in a way, the Mexican police are seeing their attempts to grasp these traditions of spirituality as a way of kind of shutting down the cartels that are trying to use, you know, supernatural powers to do what they do.
Yeah, now I've never heard of this hoodoo. What is this Southern folk magic now? I've never heard of this. Tell me a little more.
Hoodoo is, it typically is just a word used. It's kind of a blanket term to describe a number of different traditions that originally came mostly from Africa and were brought with the slaves. And so you see sort of a carrying on of these traditions. And instead of, say, when we see voodoo and we see the combination of African spirituality combined with French Catholicism, hoodoo, you'll see African spirituality combined with elements of Native American practices, Protestant practices. You might see what was an old African ritual for healing take on a new face when someone performs it as they're reading one of the Psalms out of the Bible.
Interesting, yeah.
And that culture still is still resonant in some areas of the South. You can go to Memphis. There's a very large shop there where you can buy candles and oils and books on basically how to bring about financial success and how to fix a scorned love and things like that. So it's just sort of it's another one of the survivals of African religious tradition.
Very interesting. Yeah. See, this is fascinating to me. I'd never heard of this, but it makes sense, you know, as you know, the old melting pot expression of America, you know.
Absolutely.
It makes a lot of sense. Is there more, I guess you could say, to explore with the Santa Muerte, or do you think you pretty much nailed it in the book? I got to give props to the pictures in there. They're amazing. How did you, are these courtesy of people down there, or are these from your own travels?
It's a combination of both. A lot of the photos were, you know, taken during research for the book at just different temples and different shops that I had been given access to. The ceremonies in Tepito were actually taken by a teacher who's there, and that's the photo you see on the cover and some of the ones on the inside. And there was actually a photographer who had done some work for the LA Times, and he had some just incredible photographs of a temple in Los Angeles, and so there's some photographs in there from him as well. So I'm a very visual person, and a lot of these concepts are really hard to grasp unless you can see some visuals. So I thought it was very important to bring that to the book.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And I mean, like I said, I got to give you props for it. Definitely folks need to pick up the book just for the pictures alone. I mean, they're really chilling images, some of these depictions of Santa Muerte, which makes it all the more interesting because she's so revered. And I mean, you have a quote in there from a young lady who's like a worshiper of Santa Muerte, and she just expresses such love for the deity. It's such a strange juxtaposition because it's like the figure is so frightening, but she invokes such love in her worshipers.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the things that was really hard to wrap my mind around at first, and that is that you look at something that on the surface would be just grotesque. You know, here's a skeletal figure pointing at you with these very hollow eyes and this grinning skull face, and yet you would hear people call her their beautiful mother. And so, you know, again, it just sort of is, it's getting into the worldview of the practitioner that you know, it takes that in order for us to understand what they're seeing and what they're feeling. And I think that's I think that was very important to kind of grasp where they were coming from. And while Santa Muerte is not for me personally, it is definitely for thousands of Mexicans and Americans.
Yeah, I found that kind of funny in the book, too, because you say that, you know, you don't worship Santa Muerte, but it sounded like at some point they were, like, trying to, like, push you into making sacrifices or, you know, leaving tributes and stuff to the Santa Muerte statue in one of the shops you were in. So it was like, oh, no, dude, don't. You're gonna get in trouble or something, man. Be careful.
Yeah, on one hand, you would hear stories about, oh, why don't you give her an offering? And then the next thing you would hear is stories like, you know, if you give her something, she'll always expect more. And so I said, well, you know, thank goodness I'm just a non-biased, non-attached observer, and I prefer it that way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I look at it a little bit kind of like, because what you were saying earlier about people who, you know, who didn't worship in the right way or whatever. I mean, in a way, it's kind of like, and this is probably, like, again, you know, sort of an ignorant comparison, and I apologize for that, but it's sort of, in my mind, a little bit like the Ouija board thing. Like, you don't want to mess with this thing, probably, unless you really kind of know what you're doing or you have somebody that knows what they're doing, because I think, like, it all comes from the whole belief structure, and if you're messing around with it, you know, that might not be a good idea. You know, obviously.
Yeah, that seems to be the general consensus. Yeah.
Yeah. So, folks out there, don't go get a Santa Muerte statue and start your rituals and stuff. Don't do that because, you know, we don't know what the hell might happen to you.
That's right.
And on that note, where can folks pick up Santa Muerte, Mexico's mysterious saint of death?
Well, as always, you can go to our website at www.muertebook.com. info, or you can go to Amazon or Books A Million, and the book is available there.
Nice, nice. What's the response been like to the book so far?
It's been really good. It's been I have a very varied audience of readers so far. You have people who are practitioners, and then you have people who are just extremely curious. And you know, this is the first non-law enforcement book that I've written that's not for a law enforcement audience or a public safety audience. And I just wanted to kind of put it out there for the general public because I went searching for her history and found this amazing story of things I never knew were going on.
And that's the story that people can check out when they pick up the book. Santa Muerte, Mexico's Mysterious Saint of Death, Well, Tony, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and sharing so much information here about Santa Muerte. I definitely want folks out there to go pick up the book. They will really enjoy it, I think, and they'll be really blown away just by, you know, the sheer amount of information in there and just how compelling this whole thing is. It really is quite compelling, and I'm a little concerned now because you said when you first discovered this, then you started seeing Santa Muerte all over the place. I'm afraid that's going to happen to me, but I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing. I'm not sure. Anyway, it's been great talking to you. I wish you the best of luck. Any speaking engagements you want to plug or upcoming appearances or future projects, anything like that, TV appearances, stuff like that, that you might have on the burner that you should mention?
Actually, if you just want to go to our website, we've started to put some of our upcoming signings and readings there, and we'd be glad to send out any information if folks will drop us a line at the email address, or excuse me, the web address.
Awesome. Sounds great. Well, Tony, it's been great talking to you. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I wish you the best of luck. I hope folks go and pick up the book and, you know, keep me posted on your travels and your research. And, you know, hopefully we can talk again about some of this magical religious cultures and, you know, some of the interesting, you know, lifestyles and cultures and belief systems that are going on all around the world.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
That does it for this week's edition of BOA Audio Season 5. A big, big, super huge thanks, of course, to Tony Kale for coming on the show. You can find out more from him at the website www.muertebook.info. Let me spell that out for you. Muerte, M-U-E-R-T-E, book.info. Check it out for more info on his book, Santa Muerte, Mexico's Mysterious Saint of Death. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio Listener Feedback, and we've just got one email this week, kind of long one, wanted to have it as a standalone email for this week's segment, and it comes from Dunaka McKeegan in Dublin, Ireland, and here's what he has to say. I'm Irish, and while working here from home in Dublin, there's little I enjoy more than listening to your show. I have from time to time written articles on the occult and the esoteric. I also edit and proof work concerning the esoteric for a publishing house on a voluntary basis. So when I say I think your show's great, you can take that as a big compliment. However, I do fear that my fellow listeners in the U.S. may be placed under something of a misapprehension following the recent interview with William H. Kennedy, specifically regarding the supposed superstitious nature of we Irish. I can assure both you and he that as an Irishman born, bred, and living here, as one raised in a number of Irish counties, fluent in our native language and aware of the many traditions, folk customs, and practices of my own country, he is quite wrong. I can only refute in the strongest terms possible the perhaps unintentional impression given by Mr. Kennedy that we Irish are uniquely superstitious or inclined to take more seriously than other nations the threat of hexes, curses, and spells. In fact, I suspect in this regard Mr. Kennedy has fallen prey to a long-standing stereotype in English-language cultures, the one whereby the Irish, being largely Catholic, were thus excessively superstitious, irrational, and in need of enlightened governance by their quote-unquote more civilized and rational English neighbors. None of which, of course, need take away from the merits of Mr. Kennedy's research regarding satanic activities within the Catholic Church. But surely, in this domain above all else, it is important to avoid falling prey to erroneous caricature. Anyway, that's my piece. Keep up the good work, Master Bernal, and know that at least one of the sons of Erin are listening. La Messe, Dunaka McKeegan in Dublin, Ireland. Thank you so much for writing in, Dunaka. First of all, you know I love the international listeners. I am humbled to hear that somebody all the way over there in Dublin, Ireland, is following BOA Audio. It never ceases to amaze me, the vast reach of this program. And Dunaka has allowed us to put another pushpin into the world map here, this time in Dublin, Ireland. So thank you, Dunaka. I really appreciate the email. I don't have too much to say about what you have to say here. I really just wanted your statement to stand alone. Felt that it really worked with this week's edition of the program because Tony Kale is really all about understanding various world cultures and not getting wrapped up in, as you say, misapprehensions and stereotypes. I'm sure that William H. Kennedy meant no disrespect to the great people of Ireland, and as you say, I think he probably fell prey to this stereotype. I have, of course, forwarded the email to him so he knows your take on the subject, and I wanted your point of view to be shared with the BOA Audio listeners so we can get a more well-rounded view of the world and of these folk customs, practices, and traditions in various nations, because the last thing we want to do here on the program is to put forward any long-standing stereotypes or add fuel to the fire of misplaced attributes to various cultures and communities. So once again, thank you for writing in, Danaka. You humble me with your kind words, and I really appreciate that you stepped up to the plate to clear up the misconceptions that may have been put out there by William H. Kennedy in that interview, and to enlighten all of the BOA Audio listeners as to where these stereotypes may have come from. You've done us a great service, and I thank you once again for writing in. As I said, that's the only email this week. Wanted to do just one standalone email so that it had a little more impact on the folks listening here at the end of the program. We'll try and get into some more emails next week, maybe do two or three if they're pithy. So now's the time to write in. We still have tons of emails, of course, in the BOA Audio Listener Feedback mailbag, but we love adding more into the mix. So shoot me your thoughts on the program, on the guests, on where you'd like to see things go here as we head into the close of Season 5, and I'm already sort of percolating on a number of guests for Season 6. How do you get in touch with me? That's simple. The three main methods are as follows. You go to banalofamerica.com and you click the contact button. That's pretty simple. That'll give you all the information you need to get in touch with me. Or just write to boaaudio@hotmail.com. I check that email all the time. And the final main method is to join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. Lots of great folks on there. The community is growing day after day. People on there talking about pop culture and esoterica. We like to call it BOA's paranormal playground. All kinds of fun stuff going on at theusofe.com. And as I've been saying here at the end of the show for the last few weeks, of course, I'm on all those great social networking sites, Twitter, Facebook, and MySpace. Friend me, follow me, poke me, it's all good. So those are all the correspondences. Send me your thoughts on the program. I'd love to hear them, and I'd love to feature them here on BOA Audio Listener Feedback. Up next, it is the thanks portion of the show. Allow me to roll through the list of the esteemed and infamous BOA staff. Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Rochelle Hawks, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, our contributing cartoonist, Annie Carolan, and our webmaster, Jeremy Boston. Since the last time you heard from me, we've got two new columns at BOA. The first one comes from Rochelle Hawks, her piece Medusa's Ladder, this time around titled Weeding the Bookmarks, Recommended Sites, Essays, and Videos, a veritable cornucopia of cool esoteric sites for people to check out. Lots of awesome avenues to explore thanks to Rochelle Hawks's Medusa's Ladder. And then yesterday we posted Orange Orb Confirmations from Regan Lee in her column Trickster's Realm, talking about her childhood experience seeing an orange orb in Oregon in the 1980s and how that experience has been borne out over the years with further orange orb sightings that she's uncovered in various places. So check that out for sure at BOA. I'm also sitting on an all-new Gray Matters from Leslie. We're hoping for a new piece from Marla Pena in response to this week's edition of the program regarding Santa Muerte, so keep an eye out for that at BOA as well. The BOA staff always stepping up to the plate with some powerful pieces for you to read at the website, thought-provoking missives from the talented BOA staff. We say it week in and week out, but it is true, my friends. If you're only listening to BOA audio and you're not reading the columns at Banal of America, then you're only getting half the story. BOA, make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. Allow me now to tip my hat and offer a huge thanks to the folks who have been stepping up to the plate over the last couple of weeks with donations to Banal of America and BOA Audio. We put out a serious call for donations a few weeks ago, and a lot of people have really helped us out. Of course, the bills keep coming, so I gotta keep asking for donations. Believe me, I would love it if I could sit here at the end of the program and say, hey folks, we don't need any more donations. It's awesome. We're set for life. But unfortunately, that's not the case. How can you help us out? How can you make a donation to Banal of America? That's simple. You just go to BOA and you click the PayPal button. You should be able to find it pretty easily. It says donate PayPal, help support BOA. That'll take you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. For the folks who do not like PayPal, they don't trust the internet. They don't want to put their credit card information out there. I don't blame them. The internet's a dangerous and scary place. How do you help us out if you don't want to donate via PayPal? The good news is we got you covered because we have the BOA PO box. That way you can send a snail mail donation. Here is the address for the BOA PO box. Tim Binall, B-I-N-N-A-L-L, PO Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. Pinehurst being spelled P-I-N-E-H-U-R-S-T. And the zip code, once again, 01866, PO Box 232. Put it all together and here's how it comes out for you. Tim Binall, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. As we say all the time here at the show, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards keeping BOA and BOA Audio up and running, commercial-free, and freely available for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. Next week on the program, folks, we turn BOA Audio up to 11 because we are entering into the final four of Season 5. Four superstar A-list guests lined up for you here as we close out this season of BOA Audio. I'm going to do something a little bit different here. Even though I already have the interview taped, I'm going to sit on the guest's name for now. I'm very close to locking in the remaining members of the final four of Season 5, and I don't know, I may have to push next week's episode further into the week until everything is lined up perfectly, but we are on the precipice of having it all straightened out. I will tease next week's guest simply by saying, first of all, I think it may infuriate some of our listeners. I hope that's not the case. I know it will delight a number of other listeners and really be enjoyed by a lot of folks who may not be BOA Audio listeners, who may tune into the program for the first time ever. Here is the tease for the episode, and I'll unleash the name very soon. We're talking about a pop culture conspiracy in a major way from somebody who was right in the thick of this conspiracy, and he's blowing the whistle on it. And he's telling a lot of inside information, and he's pulling the curtain back on this massive conspiracy. And this guy here, who is our guest next week, was headline news throughout the world 3 years ago when he got mixed up in all this. And that's really the most vague version of next week's guest that I can give you right now. But that's just part one of the final four of Season 5. Huge names lined up here for August as we close the book on Season 5. Folks, as I said, we're turning it up to 11. We are going into overdrive, much like last year, and ending the season on the strongest note possible. It is going to be an amazing journey over the next few weeks here on this program. And on that note, we close the book on another edition of BOA Audio. Big, big thanks once again to Tony Kale for coming on the show. Check out his website, muertebook.info. Big thanks to Danaka for writing in all the way from Dublin, Ireland, to share his thoughts on the William H. Kennedy interview. And, of course, I can't thank the BOA Audio listeners enough. You guys are the best. Thank you for your support. You are the fuel that drives the BOA machine. Believe me, I know that without you, this program would be nothing. So thank you for making this program a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.